This piece was brought to you by Roberta's, robertaspizza.com.
This week on Meat and Three, we're telling the stories behind iconic dishes. We learn what it will take to save New York's most famous egg cream, discover the importance of the goat neck in the East Village, and take a trip to India for delicious flatbreads.
Our customers who come in to get egg creams and t-shirts, they love to talk about their childhood or their teenage years or their college years.
I was living in Nepal, in northern India. And out there, there's a real famous dish, a classic dish, I should say, is called paya.
Parathe wali gali, or as it awkwardly translates in English, the lane of the stuffed flatbread makers, is probably one of the most popular food streets in Old Delhi.
Tune in to Meat and Three, HRN's weekly food news roundup, wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hey, welcome to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. This is a special show. We're out in Long Island. We're in Centerport, Long Island. Our good buddy Paul has opened up Blind Bat Bistro, the brewery we've been following for many years. And we have a really great crew of people here. We're going to stop and introduce everybody because we're out here talking about Suffolk County, Long Island, agriculture, commerce, and other things. So this man I met at a Sea Grant event in New York City this spring, and we've been waiting to come out here and meet with you. So Augie, introduce yourself, and we'll talk more about some of your initiatives.
Thank you very much. My name is Augie Ruckdeschel. I work in the Suffolk County Department of Economic Development and Planning. My position is specifically oriented around the agriculture, commercial recreational fishing industries, shellfish aquaculture, and I actually grew up as a farmer here in Suffolk County. So that was my introduction to this world in this space.
Great. Well, it's interesting. I met some New York State ag and market people who I've known for years, and they said, you know, there was a success of New York State craft beer rollout, and Sea Grant and other initiatives are trying to be launched as well. Tell us more about seafood and retail projects that you're doing.
Yeah, so what we did recently, and by we I mean Suffolk County, in working with our partners at the Long Island Farm Bureau, Cornell Cooperative Extension, Peconic Land Trust, East End Food Institute, Discover Long Island, Long Island Oyster Growers Association, many other partners, is build this Choose LI campaign. So we're asking...
Choose LI.
Yes, Choose LI. It's at choosely.org is the website. And what we're doing is we're asking local Suffolk County residents to spend a small portion of their food budget on local food, food that's grown locally.
Like tithing to the church, but tithing to the locals.
Yeah, I think that's a fair analogy. what we found is that your average Suffolk County household spends about $176 per week on food. So we're saying, hey, spend 10% of that, so just $17.60 a week, purchasing local food, local beverages. That includes things like beer and wine, but also oysters and fish and seafood, locally grown produce, you know, fruits and vegetables. We're getting into fall now, so you have lots of opportunity to go out there and buy cauliflower and broccoli and Brussels sprouts and kale and collard greens. So there's a lot of opportunities out there. And to make it easier for people, what we did is we mapped every single farm stand in Suffolk County, every single farmer's market, every single brewery, every single cidery, every single distillery, every flower retailer, every fish market, every restaurant that's selling local oysters. So we don't want to give people excuses not to meet their pledge. We're asking for $17.60. It's a real, real powerful injection into the local economy, and we're gonna pull you right up to the door and show you how you could do that.
That's a great idea. I think we're gonna talk a lot more about that. So let's introduce the guests that you brought and how you're related to this. What are you guys doing out here?
Augie told us to come out here, so we did. I'm Anthony Caggiano, co-owner of Jamesport Farm Brewery, which is a real farm brewery. We grow our own grains, our own barley. We grow our own hops to the extent that we use mostly all our own grains and our own hops.
That's great. That's great. And your wife's here.
Hi, I'm Melissa Caggiano. I'm the co-owner of Jamesport Farm Brewery. Anthony stole my thunder and took everything away that we do, but we have, aside from growing our own ingredients on the farm, we also have a tasting room where we have a large tasting room outdoor area, and people get to actually come enjoy the farm and be part of it and share it with us. And that's like kind of our goal, is to have people come out and see where your food came from, that, or the ingredients came from that made your beer that you get to enjoy. So
I'll tell you, when I think about food and retail and seafood and beers and wines and everything, I always think North Fork. I think more people in America probably think Montauk, but for me, I think North Fork. So help us define what is Suffolk County, because there's so many industries that you're covering. We've got breweries, we've got wineries, we've got seafood industries.
I'm going to say, because I represent Suffolk County, there's really experiences everywhere scattered throughout. And if you look at the map, it's really exciting, because you don't realize how close an opportunity is to you. I think it would be fair to say the North Fork is kind of, if you will, the mecca of kind of a food or culinary experience. You are going to have access to some really fresh seafood out there. We have a very robust Suffolk County aquaculture lease program in Peconic and Gardner's Bay. And hopefully one of our other guests, Chuck, can tell us more about that later. But these are farmers operating in those waters. And then recently in the town of Southold, they just passed the new law that will allow those oyster growers to sell directly to consumers at kind of roadside stands. So you have those opportunities on the North Fork. You have them in the South Fork as well. There's great seafood opportunities.
A tasting room for shellfish.
Yeah, it is to some extent. I think maybe the farm stand is a little bit of a closer analogy, because they won't be shucking on site. It's really just picking up a bag of oysters. So it's oysters to go. And it's important to make that distinction, because the oyster growers have promised as such.
Great. So who's your other guest here?
So learn to shuck oysters. There's the bottom line.
Mr. Learn to Shuck Oysters.
Yes, yes.
What's your name?
You can see, I'm Chuck Westfall. I run a oyster farm in the Great South Bay with my partner, Sean O'Brien. Our oysters are called Fire Island Blues. The blue is a nod to the fact that these are true Blue Point oysters, which are only from the Great South Bay. And I tell many people that say that they've had a Blue Point, chances are they've never had a Blue Point, because we've just resurrected this fishery. And the great thing that we discovered about resurrecting the Blue Point in the Great South Bay is whatever made this the most famous and desirable oyster in the past, whatever did that is still in the water and still doing it. This is some of the best oysters you can find on this planet.
That's great. Yeah.
So that's what we're doing.
And you're going to be participating in a roadside farm stand or in any other retail initiatives?
I probably won't do a roadside thing because, I'm in town of Islip. It doesn't really lend itself to that too much. But, you know, that's mostly out on the North Fork, and I certainly encourage people to go out there, and because I don't care how you do it or whose oyster you do it with, just get an oyster in your belly, and I'm happy.
Suffolk County has such a history of, I'm reading some of your materials at the Suffolk County government site in terms of fisheries, commercial fishing, and shellfish. It's unbelievable. So we've got a lot to talk about today. Let's introduce everybody else. I know a couple of the brewers that are here as well.
Hey, Jimmy, how are you? I'm Jamie Adams from St. James Brewery. We are a local farm brewery as well. We do most of our sales out of different farmers markets around Long Island and upstate New York, and we'll be opening a tasting room in St. James in about a month.
Great, man. We've had you on the show quite a few times.
Yeah, nice to see you again.
Nice to see you. And we're in a new outpost. Paul, introduce yourself and tell us about this new spot here.
Hi there. Paul DeLugo-Kinski, Blind Bat Brewery, Centerport, Long Island, New York. Been brewing for just about 10 years plus, basically selling to bars, restaurants, beer stores, doing farmers markets for years. Haven't had my own space until just a couple of months ago, where we opened up what used to be a fish market, is now a little accommodation, tap room, bistro, etc. We've got a little food component. We use as much local as we can. We're also a farm brewery in the same way that Jamie and St. James is, as opposed to Melissa and Tony, making the commitment to grow using New York State grown ingredients. So like the Hefeweizen you've got in front of you is all New York State wheat and barley and New York State hops.
That's
the Harbor Fields Hefeweizen, named after the local library and school district. So I like the alliteration, apparently. Blind Bat Brewery, Harbor Fields Hefeweizen. Yeah.
This is the Blind Bat. What's the name of the beer?
Harbor Fields Hefeweizen. So we're actually towards the end of the season on the Hefeweizen. But again, using as much New York State grown ingredients. And then my wife grows some things that I brew with, namely herbs and things. And then we've got friends who grow potatoes. potatoes and sweet potatoes that I brew more autumn and winter type things with. So,
you know, Augie, we haven't, it took us a long time to get this show together, and partly because I decided to come out here to Center Point to see you guys. And coming to Paul's tasting room is a big part of that because we've been friends for a long time.
Yeah, congratulations. Thank you
very
much.
Let's talk more about the retail component. So first, you guys at Jamesport, you guys are a farm. We were a farm first, and you decided to add the brewery. Tell us about that process.
So actually, initially, we were not a brewery at all. We were a farm. We've been growers and plant growers and nursery growers. We actually transitioned into growing hops for other brewers who were friends of ours who needed New York State-grown hops for their farm brewery license. So we started growing hops about 8 years ago. We put in our hop yard. After that, they started asking for New York State-grown barley, so we tried our hand at that as well. And then they all looked at us and said, well, you're on the North Fork on Sound Avenue in the middle of Tourism Central. Why don't you have your own brewery? So we did the research and decided, why won't we just take our own ingredients and make our own beer and have a tasting room there? So that's how that kind of happened.
And Augie, in your job, are you encouraging farmers to grow or, you know, adapt to their retail component?
I think one of the things that Long Island does really well, Long Island farmers, that is adapts, and I think it's necessary. I mean, this used to be potato country, right? I mean, we used to have 35,000 acres of potatoes alone. Now we're below 3,000, and the reason is because they moved into different commodities, different crops, some crops with higher profit margins and so on. As they mentioned, they're in the middle of Tourism Central. Whether they like it or not, agritourism is becoming a much more important component of farming. You know, some farmers are not interested in it, and that's fine. They want to do the wholesale vegetable farming that they did growing up. I did wholesale vegetable farming, you know, when I was a kid. So I understand that, but other farmers are looking at, okay, how do we expand or change or modify our business model? What are our consumers looking for?
What about when you were a kid? So you had some farming background.
Yeah, so I grew up farming with my uncle on my mother's side. We never owned land, which is an important part of the story. We always rented. So we were bouncing around a lot in parts of central Suffolk, where unfortunately now, and it's not too much later, it's 22 years later, none of those farms remain. We were in Nessequag, we were in St. James, we were in Commack, parts of central Suffolk that even recently people don't associate with farming, but we lost a lot of that land. We lost access. But we grew everything. We grew 25 to 35 different crops every year. We sold it to our farm stand. We sold it to other farm stands. But, you know, times change and business models change. And I see, you know, the farm stand, the direct retail, is becoming a much larger part of the kind of farming experience. As of the latest 2017 U.S. Census, which just came out in 2019, you know, the increase in direct retail sales went up something like 226%. And agritourism went up about like 400%. So we're seeing a movement in the different things that we're growing. We're seeing hops farms now in Suffolk County. I have never seen a hops farm until very recently, honestly. I was like, what are those poles? What is that?
I just wanted to add to Augie's point. Being here on Long Island and in Suffolk County in particular, the economic aspect of the agricultural environment and community, I think, is magnified a lot more than in other agricultural parts of the country. So we really have to take that in consideration. And one of the ways that we do that as brewers, and specifically using local ingredients, is when we spend our money buying local raw materials to use in our beer, we're basically keeping that dollar within our own economic environment. And then another local, the farmer, for example, is going to spend that dollar in another local capacity. And it keeps that $1 moving around our small economic environment, which keeps the viability of our environment a lot stronger than if we are buying stuff from out of state, selling it here, where our dollars
are to a multinational
exactly
somewhere.
Exactly, and I think that you're seeing a lot of that start to flourish, especially with the growth of the farmers markets and local farmers really understanding that, going directly to the customer, and also expanding their markets by farmers here that used to just grow tomatoes or potatoes. Well, now they're growing hops, right? Now they're growing barley. Now that it's taking it in another direction, and they're doing honey, things that they were not doing before. It's opening a lot more doors for them because of the economic pressure that they're facing here.
I actually have a question for...
Go for it.
Yeah, yeah. So you're growing barley. What malt house are you shipping it off to?
Well, that's a very good question that you had to ask
them. Okay.
So currently, there are no malt houses.
There's nothing on Long Island. I know Brian Zimmerman for years was trying to get one going.
Well,
Augie here has been helping us to change that.
Okay, awesome.
Yeah, we've been trying... It's Augie's been very helpful in trying to... work with the regulations because, well...
It's not easy.
No, the towns... You were talking about your difficulties opening up the brewery. Imagine I want to open a malt house and they have no idea what
that
is.
Well, the towns and then Suffolk County wastewater.
The sewer system.
So for you guys, I know that that's happened with septic systems.
Yep.
But for you guys, what you're trying to do is you're trying to save your farms and grow your farms and doing things that nobody really understands, right?
Well, one of the problems with what we're doing is we're growing the grains. We have a grain drying bin, which if you're growing barley and you don't have a grain drying bin, don't grow barley. So we have to then grain out, put it on a super sack, get it on a truck, get it upstate, either Hudson Valley, Albany. They malt it, then I have to truck it back. So all those costs just have to get absorbed by me.
So you can't just put in a little kiln or malt facility?
Well, we hope to possibly do that in the future. Augie has brought a bunch of county officials. We did have several meetings. I think we're going to be allowed to do it. DEC, DOH is kind of okay with it. So I don't know. Augie.
That's awesome. That's great.
Can you tell us more about your farming background, the farm that you're on, the history?
We're surrounded by potato farms. Our farm was a potato farm. We rent this property. We don't own it. We would like to buy it. We can't afford it because it's exorbitantly expensive. The taxes are exorbitantly high. That's another reason we opened the brewery was to diversify our business model to make enough money to be able to afford to farm in the most expensive farmland in the United States.
And now, so tell us about some of the things that you're recognizing this scenario. You know what's good for the economy.
So part of the challenge of government is reacting to changing business environment, right? And we're not always super nimble about doing it. You know, we're reactive, rarely proactive. So that is a situation we have here. And I have been trying. They're giving me too much credit. You know, it honestly comes down to the fact that they've never seen it before. It wasn't something that they've had to consider. I've sent videos, you know, YouTube videos to people in government agencies. I'm not here to single out my colleagues here, but in the DEC, in the Department of Health Services, that this is the process. This is what they want to do. How can we accommodate that? Because again, whether it's farming or whether it's something like growing oysters in off-bottom cages or floating cages, we're seeing all these new things that we never saw before. So now we're saying, okay, how are we going to regulate? How are we going to legalize these processes? And it's challenging. It's difficult. It's slow moving sometimes. You know, to bring it back into the seafood space, we had a very onerous, and I mean recently, an onerous process for oyster shuckers, for a grower like Chuck, to go to, say, a brewery, a farm brewery, to come to a place like this and just shuck oysters. You know, we were charging them, you know, $95 a pop. There was very cumbersome, regulatory requirements. $95 a permit, and for every time. So Chuck and his team from Long Island Oyster Growers Association met with the county exec, and the county exec legitimately said, county exec Steve Malone said, yes, that's ridiculous, let's fix that. And everyone walked out of the room, and they looked like, oh, is he serious? Is this gonna happen? I'm like, I think he is serious. And we made it happen quick, we reformed it. It took some time, again, to get the process in place and come up with a new format. But what we did is we created a new annual permit. So we're gonna issue one permit. We're gonna pilot it out. We're gonna do it for free for 2 years. Mm-hmm. Because again, we want Chuck and his colleagues to set up at Jamesport and do events. We want them to go to vineyards. We want them to go to Jamie's new place and do oyster shucking. Because again, it's good for the economy and it's good for our environment too. Oyster growing is really great for, it cleans up our waters. Mm-hmm.
So Chuck, now tell us what you've been doing.
Well, I'll say Augie was not all that truthful about something. They were very nimble. Steve Ballone and Augie I was stunned. They literally, ran out of the room and got this thing done. So now, wineries, breweries, pubs, bars can have, you know, a Thursday night chucking event or anything, and we can do that efficiently. The oyster farmer can make a little money and hopefully bring in a crowd that, you know, buys more beer and wine and so forth. So that was great. They were extremely nimble. I just, I was stunned. So
no, thank you.
Hats off, Augie. He got it done.
Big picture stuff. How does shellfish clean the water, help our environment, make the seas better for everything?
Well, you get into some tall weeds there. I mean, it's a complex thing. But by and large, shellfish are filter feeders, and they're the keystone species of any estuary. And we unfortunately have basically stripped them out. So in order for an estuary to restore itself, you have to restore the keystone species. For reasons that get pretty technical and pretty far afield, it's not as easy as just throwing some more seed out in the bay, and you know, you can't just go out there like Johnny Appleseed and make this happen. So oyster farmers are now inserting themselves in that necessary niche that brings this keystone species back into the environment that allows other species to begin to thrive.
We also have, particularly in Long Island and Long Island waterways, surface waters, groundwaters, a problem with excess nitrogen. And what oysters can do, and other shellfish can do, but oysters do it very well, is remove excess nitrogen. You know, an oyster can filter about 30 to 50 gallons of water a day. And that's, you know, when that oyster is harvested, it's removed. When there's excess nitrogen, you know, we have things like harmful algal blooms, which can lead to fish kills. So they're providing an environmental benefit on top of the economic benefit that they're generating. So it's a real exciting, it's not, I sometimes call it a new kind of form of growing in Suffolk County, but that's actually not true at all. It's actually been going on forever. This is perhaps a different version of that type of farming, but it's exciting. And I serve as the chair of the Suffolk County Aquaculture Lease Program, and that's like the most fun thing that I do, you know, is issue leases to a bunch of, for some people it's a first career, for a lot of other people it is a second career. It is something they do because they read about it and they're really interested in it and they see the environmental benefits, which probably, you know, they're probably doing more of us a service because, like Chuck said, he's not getting rich doing it, but he's having a lot of fun.
When I first came out to North Fork, it was 2009, and I went to Karen and Greg Rivera's place where they had the oyster hatchery in Pecan Bay. Who wants to talk to me about the hatchery business, how important that is, you know, some of the steps that have been taken to restore oysters?
Hatcheries are crucial. You know, I mentioned that, you know, we stripped out the oysters, and hatcheries are that small little thing that allows us to complete the cycle. I like to say, you know, any moron can grow oysters. I do.
You're not just
But to get a oyster to create the next generation, which creates the next generation, that's a trick. And it's something we haven't pulled off. The hatcheries fill in that gap for us. So until we can restore via aquaculture, what I'm doing and others are doing, until we can restore the environmental realities so that that small little thing of fertilization, hatchering, and what's called setting, the hatcheries take care of that for us. But as Augie pointed out, 50 gallons a day, I have over 3.5 million oysters on my plot alone, and I'm just one person out there. So I did the math, and if you multiply 50 times $3.5 million, I wish. I'm dreaming. By 3.5 million oysters.
That's money.
It comes out to a number that has so many zeros, I don't know how to state the number. That's how big the number is. So it's you know, it's significant. And oyster farmers are doing a serious environmental lift that's not happening by anybody else that I know of.
We have 11 public and private shellfish hatcheries in Suffolk County. And generally, the public hatcheries are doing kind of what we might describe as the wild seeding. You know, they're spreading out. They're going out into their bays in their municipalities or towns, and they're spreading. They're trying to rebuild the natural population. They're trying to rebuild the population for your traditional baymen, right, that would go out in the water and do wild catch harvest. The private hatcheries are really growing to sell to other oyster farmers. So there are kind of different types of hatcheries, but we got 11. Governor Cuomo has decided this is a major priority for him. He's pumping real state money, I think the last was another $5 million, into rebuilding natural oyster population. So this isn't wild harvest, but it's purely for the projects that he's funding. It's purely as an environmental kind of cause or I guess end goal. So the idea is, again, to rebuild the natural set. So they're growing all these oysters that they're going to wild seed in closed off areas, so uncertified waters where people can't go and harvest them. And again, the idea is to rebuild that natural population and then help those oysters restore some of the water quality.
I mean, I understand oysters was a big thing Long Island generations ago, years ago. So was eels was a big thing, apparently, and clams. Are clams not as beneficial as oysters?
So they don't quite remove as much. I don't think they're quite as effective, but... and I know clams not as well as I know oysters, okay. But I do know it is part of the Governor Cuomo's efforts as well.
I'm thinking some diversity.
So they are. I know Cornell Cooperative Extension out in Suffolk County, out their operation out in Southold is one of the public hatcheries that's doing this. So they are growing hard clams to seed out into waters and also oysters. So, but I mean our hard clam harvest is down something like 99.9% from, you know, the 1950s, the 1930s. I mean, they tell me it's before my time, but I've heard it from more than one person that you used to be able to jump from boat to boat to boat, all the boats out there that were simply doing wild harvest, you know, clamming.
Yeah. So for the average shopper, be they on Long Island or New York City, if they're looking for Long Island seafood, in addition to oysters, are there any other species of fish or shellfish that they should be looking for?
Excellent, thank you. So October is National Seafood Month. And one of the things I really wanted to talk about today is that there is, and I'm really excited to see all the energy and excitement that goes into agriculture. Because when I was a kid, it was not cool to be a farmer. There wasn't a food network. There weren't celebrity chefs. It was not a sexy occupation. I was not a cool high schooler because I had to work on the farm, you know, after school was done. Like, that didn't make me...
Well, now you need a master's degree.
But for whatever reason, that still kind of... I haven't cracked the reason yet. A lot of that energy hasn't transferred over to seafood, which I think is unfortunate, because the United States probably has the best managed fisheries in the entire planet. Best managed fisheries. So we have our issues as far as, you know, management of you know, different fish species out there. Some can be overfished, some are underfished. It's very difficult to get that balance exactly right, but we do it better than any other country in the world. So really, when people are looking to purchase seafood, they should rest assured that if they're buying U.S. seafood, they're getting a sustainably managed species. And what we have here in Suffolk County is we still have a robust commercial fishing industry, but we don't have a lot of that excitement behind it for whatever reason.
Join Heritage Radio Network on Monday, November 11th for a raucous feast to toast a decade of food radio. Our 10th anniversary Bacchanal is a rare gathering of your favorite chefs, mixologists, storytellers, thought leaders, and culinary masterminds. We'll salute the inductees of the newly minted HRN Hall of Fame, who embody our mission to further equity, sustainability, and deliciousness. Explore the beautiful Palm House and Yellow Magnolia Cafe. Taste and imbibe to your heart's content, and bid on once-in-a-lifetime experiences and tasty gifts for any budget at our silent auction. Tickets available now at heritageradionetwork.org/gala.
My name is Brandon Hoy, co-owner of Roberta's, a super duper awesome place. Roberta's is a very, 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 very proud sponsor of the Heritage Radio Network. We're also super awesome. Thank you, Heritage.
Let's go back to Jamie. So I'd like you to talk about things like, not particular regulatory issues, but what it's been like, you know, if the evolution of the state's, you know, craft beer laws and things like that that have applied to you, how you've interacted with your county?
Sure. For us as a brewery at St. James Brewery, we started with our farm license. We're actually dual licensed. We have a regular microbrewery license and we've got a farm license. To my knowledge, I don't think we've ever brewed on our non-farm brewery license, although we still do keep the license. We do everything through our farm brewery. When we started this in 2011 is when we got our farm brewery license and our regular brewery license. But we use local ingredients and we promote local because it's something that we believe in. When we first started, we were lucky enough to have different ingredients from local farmers, and we just knew right away that it was better quality ingredients, fresher.
St. James Brewery, because you've been on our show about.
What we really focus on now is we've got our suppliers in terms of local ingredients that we use down pat, and we started to brew with a beer that we harvested from a shipwreck right here off of the coast of Long Island last year, and we were on your show about 6 months ago, 8 months ago,
great
Jimmy.
Show, really good.
Yeah, talk about that. So we're really trying to incorporate a lot of what it means to promote local ingredients, and we want to do that in a way that really, like Augie was saying, that has a little panache to it, where we want to make farming and we want to make that whole genre of supporting local cool. And we do that really by promoting a lot of our stuff at different markets, farmers markets, and alongside the farmers, so that people get a firsthand experience of they come and they meet.
Tell us about our friend the hop farmer.
So our dear friend, the hop farmer, John Kinsella, he's in Wading River, which is about the North Fork of Long Island. He's been growing hops since 2010, I believe, and he sticks with it every year. He's got some of the greatest hops that I've been able to use, and we specifically, we use his hops in our recipes pretty much all the time.
Interesting. Now, Paul, tell us about
This location, it took a long time to find a location. I'd been doing the brewery part-time since 2008, then started looking for a location around 2013, 2014. Won't bore you with the details of places. It didn't work out for various reasons, but like Dorothy.
Paul has many fans. Who kept up with him?
Yeah, yeah. It's been
almost signed the lease, almost opening in several locations.
Right.
That's a challenge as well of having a good business is getting the right
retail. Right, right. And as Augie says, he doesn't have to be the bad guy, but someone in wastewater management, sewage management, zoning, all sorts of things. They're people, they're not looking to be the bad guy, but sometimes that's what happens. And you sometimes have three pieces working. Yeah.
You found a place that was...
It's close to home, so
what is this place?
We're in Centerport, which is between Huntington and Northport. Right in the center. There is no actual center to Centerport, so we kind of spread out a little bit. This is a little strip that was built in the late 40s, early 50s. This location years ago was a luncheonette, then it was a bar, then it was empty, and the most recent tenant was... The most recent tenant was a fish market, and I used to come and buy my oysters for my oyster stout from the gentleman who had this store. The plumbing is in place. Yeah, we had to do some rebuilding, but we were very fortunate. There wasn't a lot we had to do. So having the food component was important to us, my wife Regina and I. Oddly enough, my original concept, back when I was dreaming of starting a brewery, I was into making crepes at the time. I thought, oh, we've had a little place to make crepes, make beer. And I thought, well, that's stupid to try and take on two different businesses at once. But here I am. I'm making smash burgers. I'm making knishes. I'm making Sloppy Joes. I'm making handheld food, sometimes the beer that I brew. Sometimes I'm in the kitchen. Sometimes we've got our friend.
We took the train to Huntington, the Long Island Railroad.
Yep.
We took a short taxi ride. The taxi was waiting for us. We came here, it's what, a 10-minute ride by taxi.
Right.
And this is a great little strip in a quiet town, but if I lived out here, I'd be here every weekend. So you did a great job.
Oh, thank you. Oh, what's also nice is there are other breweries here. This is the great thing about, I think Suffolk County, I might be wrong, maybe Augie can correct me, Suffolk County has more breweries than any other county in the state of New York.
Not only is that true, we have more breweries than New York City.
Okay.
So I have 33 breweries mapped on the Choose LI website, which is not to say maybe I haven't missed one. Breweries open all the time.
There's a lot opening.
All the time.
Well, it's a great thing. You can come out to Suffolk County, and you can hit a number of breweries in one little trip. So if somebody wants to take the train out to Huntington, they can hit Six Harbors in Huntington Village. They can hit Degenuber. Degenuber. Take an Uber. Or Lyft, if you want to, you know, depends whose stock you want. And then there's also, of course, Sand City in Northport, Harborhead in Northport. And then if you just kind of go along the whole north of coast of Long Island or in the middle or the south, you can start almost anywhere and have a nice little brewery tour, which
so that's
is great.
As part of Choose Long Island, are you going to create brewery tours? A tour of going to the farm stand and a brewery and an oyster place.
It's funny that you should say that. So really we do, 100%. So I'll tell a funny story about myself. So two Fridays ago, I took the day off from work, and I said, I'm going to take my bike out to, I took the train to Matatuck out in Southold, said, I'm just going to crisscross the North Fork and ride around. I ended up riding 37 miles on my bike on a day where I wasn't drinking that much.
Is it a bicycle or a motorcycle?
Bicycle.
Okay.
Bicycle.
Right.
Yeah, I rode 37 miles on my bicycle, and I hit three vineyards, two breweries, and two bars on a day that I was mostly riding my bicycle. So you can, but you could build experiences. They don't need to be that intense on either the physical or the drinking side, but you could really build exciting days. You could go to the map and say, okay, here's the farm stands, here's two vineyards I want to hit, or here's a vineyard and a brewery. You know, what's great about over by Jamesport, you could hit a distillery, a vineyard, in a brewery all within 3/4 of a mile of one another. You could walk it. I mean, you could get an Uber out there, whatever, and you could walk to the 3 or 4 places. You have the Halleckville Museum is not far from you guys.
Paul Quilly, one more time, tell us the beer that I'm drinking.
Oh, you're drinking. Oh, thank you. Actually, I gave you some more of the Harborfields Hefeweizen. It's 50% New York State wheat, 50% New York State barley, all New York State hops, and then just...
And Jeremy knows that I advocate for... more local, the better.
Right.
Thank you, guys.
So, and the Hudson Valley malt is malt house is one of the maltsters that I use, as well as 1886. They're up closer to Rochester, but they've been working with New York State farmers. Other than Melissa and Tony, I don't know if anyone else on Long Island is growing barley or wheat for brewing. There's those ladies who are growing wheat, I think, to bake with
Amber Waves.
That's
Amber Waves.
So if you're talking about opening up a malting facility, I assume, obviously, to take care of your own malting needs. Are there any other farmers that you're starting to talk to who might be growing on Long Island for you?
Well, let's just state one thing. It's really hard to grow barley.
It is.
So there are so many things that could go wrong at the last minute, and your entire crop is gone. I've heard horror stories from upstate New York. A guy lost 100 acres because there was a storm the day before he was going to combine. And it laid the crop down. He couldn't do it. But so we're technically allowed to malt on our farm for our own use. However, I don't think we could spend the kind of money for the equipment for our own use.
It's
so I would have to look to sell some of it. But I think, though, some of the farmers would. There are other farmers near us that do grow barley. It's not a lot. Yeah. But they have a hard time selling it because they didn't have the market set up before they started growing some of the barley.
Were they growing barley with the mind for brewing or distilling, or was it for feed?
Malting barley is a specific variety.
That's what I was wondering.
So there are barley growers, but not for the malting purposes.
Right.
I've heard of two guys that did some malting barley growing.
They didn't understand how to get it to the marketplace, to the brewers, and so it kind of sat in their barn and went bad, which is terrible.
That's sad. It's a lot of work.
That's a good point, is that every innovation in agriculture, you need to think it through fully, because at the end of the day, as a small farmer, you're the one who's risking the most. And so any types of innovations that we're talking about, we really have to have an end game. We have to have a place for all these things to be processed and sold. And that's like, I think that's the case. I'm only talking, I don't usually talk so much, but I'm talking so much because
we do want to kind of try to get to the end game. So with you, with Chuck, let's go back to you with oysters. At what point did you decide that you were going to get into the oyster game, and what were the economic factors that made you feel like you could do it, or was it just a hobby?
Well, it's far beyond the hobby, I'll tell you that. But I retired, and I don't golf, and I wanted something to do. I tend to be involved in projects. And the ecological issues sort of attracted me. Also, I grew up on the Great South Bay, and I wanted to kind of reattach to my roots. And I started out at the SPAT program out in Southold, which is sort of a, what do you call them, a community garden?
I think that's a fair description. It's like a community garden opportunity for shellfish
growers. For shellfish growers, yeah. So I started doing this, and I'd been in business all my life, and I said, well, hell, I can scale this up, you know, and I decided to then go out and look for opportunities to, you know, get some bay bottom. And that started me on this, the arduous task of going through the regulatory issues to get a lease and a bay bottom and all the permitting that is required to grow oysters.
So we're going really deep, but I'd like to say that some of the precedents that we've believed in and followed has been what the state has done for craft beer industry. And we're seeing things happening more with aquaculture, and that's how we met at the Sea Grant event. Let's start summing this up. Let's get some big pictures. And we know that it's been good for nursery people and people that are renting farms, the opportunity to have a farm brewery. We know that it's created many breweries. I mean, we're over 400 breweries in New York State now. We know that and the opportunity to have tasting rooms is good for everyone. It's good for your local economy because we're not fighting a big box store anymore. If we can have every small producer being able to sell their product, wow, suddenly we actually have a thriving local retail economy. And I know that, and this is what inspires me about what you're doing. So let's try to sum this up. Tell us the big numbers.
Suffolk County is one of the top agricultural counties in New York State as well, which most people would never believe, but we were number one a few years back. So we're a very high producer of agriculture.
Agriculture and fishing is such an important driver of our economy, and it's a driver of our tourism economy. It's the reason that people come out to Long Island, and is to have seafood-based experiences, to have agricultural-based experiences, to visit wine country, to go to a brewery. Again, where else can you go to, you know, 33 breweries and a population of 2 million people? That's incredible. And they're all different. They're different experiences, which is so exciting.
Great. Paul.
Yes.
When I first met you, you were making beers with local ingredients, including your potato stout.
Yep.
You also said you may have been making an oyster stout. So tell
me
how you use the local ingredients in your beers that you're making now.
Well, since we're talking oysters, the oyster stout, originally I just would put the oysters into the boil kettle, and those poor little creatures would meet their end there, and then we'd drink it. But then, because I do a couple of smoked beers, one day I thought, hey, maybe I'll smoke the oysters. So I smoked oysters over alderwood, only because in my mind, I don't know anything about smoking fish, but I know from reading that alderwood is used for smoking salmon.
But also what's unique about you is the potato stout.
Yes, yeah, yes.
How did you make potato stout? And what does potato mean to this part of the island?
I grew up in Levittown, which used to be all potato fields. This fact, the street I grew up on was Russet Lane, named after a potato. So I've been, and being half Polish, quarter Irish, quarter German, I like potatoes. So because I like beer and because I like potatoes and I like darker beers, I kind of just played around with making a potato stout. The first time I made it, it was terrible. I found out I should probably peel the potatoes. So peel the potatoes, boil the potatoes, mash the potatoes.
One more time, tell us exactly where we are, the name of the place.
We are at the Blind Bat Brewery Bistro and Takeaway because it's 16 seats. We have a lot of neighborhood people who take stuff away. They come in, they get beer and food to go. We have a seasonal menu. We're in Center Port, Long Island.
So, Jamie, same for you. So, once again, some of the particular local things, like we know John Conzella,
Tell us about that.
For me, it's a very seasonal thing. So when I start the season, around here, strawberries. They're the biggest draw out here at the beginning of the season. The strawberries we get from a place called Sajeki Farms, and that's in Calverton. We go through there. We work with John Kinsella's farm again to get our blueberries. And then towards the end, we actually work with Sang Lee Farms for a couple of our other ingredients. At the end of the year, we use apples. Where other people would have a pumpkin beer this time of year, we make an apple beer to celebrate the apple harvest that we get from a place called Richter's Orchards, which is just down the road from here in Northport.
Doug said he has something else from local.
I want to give oyster farmers, you can't come to our farm, unfortunately. But you can come to a couple of places that support local oyster farmers, and one is in Patchogue. I suggest you go to Catch. They are great. They have a chalkboard. You can get local oysters all over the place. They're up there. Choose some, sample them. The other great place is in Greenport, and that's Little Creek. So on the North Fork, Little Creek in Greenport, it's a great place to sample oysters, local oysters. And in Patchogue, which is a great fun town if anybody's been going.
So I think it's great that we're talking about great places on Long Island and iconic places, and Patchogue is going to be one of those iconic places again that Chuck mentioned. Catch is there, but we have three breweries in Patchogue alone, all within walking distance. We have, of course, Blue Point Brewery, but also Patchogue Beer Project, which is brand new, and Brick House, which is perhaps our oldest brewery remaining in Suffolk County.
Brick House was one of the very first on Long Island.
It was them and John Harvard's, and Harvard's isn't with
and
us anymore.
And Brick House,
was before Blue Point.
Yes, absolutely. And they invested in Patchogue when no one wanted to go into Patchogue.
Without question.
It was like how parts of Brooklyn used to be nightmarish. That's how Patchogue used to be. So.
And now it's an amazing place to go and visit.
They started, that's ground zero.
There's so many great things happening. We're going to do follow-ups to this. We hope to come out and talk to you guys more about your region and these new retail oyster-shucking brewery farm trails that seem to be taking off in the state. So Augie, thanks. It's so great to meet you, and thanks for inviting me out here to Centerport, Long Island. It's Centerport, New York, but it's Long Island.
Long Island, New York. Centerport, Long Island, New York.
Yeah, this is so great. Everybody, please say your name and your affiliation one more time. We'll go around the room and close it out.
Augie Ruckdeschel, Suffolk County Department of Economic Development and Planning.
Anthony Caggiano, Jamesport Farm Brewery.
Melissa Caggiano, Jamesport Farm Brewery.
Jamie Adams, St. James Brewery.
Paul DeLugo-Kinski, Blind Bat Brewery, Centerport, Long Island, New York.
Chuck Westfall, oyster grower, Fire Island Blue Oysters.
Thank you, Blind Bat Brewery, for all this great, strong Hefeweizen that we've been drinking out here in Centerport, Long Island. I'm Jimmy Carboni. Thanks for joining us on the Heritage Radio Network. Our producer, Dylan Hoyer, and other engineers and people will be processing the show. We will catch you sometime on Beer Sessions Radio. All right, thank you so much.
Beer Sessions Radio is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like. Tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.